Is a market crash coming in December? Well, if the Fed gets their way, watch out below. Stay tuned because the crown's coming out. All that and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today because we're back at the racetrack as the Fed is about to embark on a massive policy mistake that could send stocks lower. But is this the big crash that people have been expecting? Or is it potentially just a correction that will give those risk takers another opportunity to buy the dip? Well, I'll let you be the judge. Let's pick the story up where we see the Federal Reserve needs to act on Powell's words. If central bankers don't accelerate the taper at their policy meeting in 2 weeks, it'll be too late. And when the U.S. Federal Reserve holds its next policy-making meeting in mid-December, officials will face a tough decision, whether to remove stimulus by cutting back more sharply on asset purchases, as Chair Jerome Powell suggested they might in his testimony to Congress this week. I think they probably should, says this author, and probably will double the pace of tapering. Set a trajectory to end the asset purchase program by mid-March. Now, one thing I want you to understand is the Fed does listen to the news. They do listen to Wall Street. And when everyone else is giving them the green light to do something, they generally don't disappoint. So I want you to already be prepared for the Fed to increase the pace of its tapers. But let's continue on the story because I want to show you how tapering affects equity prices. But let's continue on to see just what the Fed might do. Here we see this headline, Powell weighs an earlier end to the bond tapering amid hot inflation. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said officials should weigh removing pandemic support at a faster pace, and he retired the word transitory. Well, that's funny, because I'm not retiring the word transitory, but we'll let him for now. To describe stubbornly high inflation through a new COVID-19 strain remains a risk. It is appropriate, I think, for us to discuss at our next meeting, which is in a couple of weeks, whether it be appropriate to wrap up our purchases a few months earlier. So that would be that March timeline, said Powell, selected last week by President Joe Biden for another four-year term as Fed chief. In those 2 weeks, we're going to get more data and learn a lot more about the new variant. The U.S. Central Bank is currently scheduled to complete its asset purchase program in mid-2022 under a plan announced at the start of November to slow buying by $15 billion a month. So already get prepared for that number to go above 30. The next gathering of the policy setting FOMC committee is December 14th and 15th. Of course, we'll be covering that on when it happens, where they could make a decision to accelerate the tapering. Policymakers, including Governor Christopher Waller and Fed Presidents Mary Daly of San Francisco and Raphael Bostic of Atlanta, have all said they would consider a faster pace of tapering if economic data remains strong. So I want you to see already that Powell's team is already telling him, yeah, we're on board with this. So you have the news, you have Wall Street, you have his own committee, so you can already tell what's going to happen at the December meeting. What we don't know is what the change in the pace will be. Of course, we'll also discuss about how bad that could be for equity markets, but just hang tight because the bipartisan support during the hearing for more forceful action on inflation also gave Powell political backing to speed up the taper prior to a vote in his second term as Fed chair. So even Congress is all on board of making a massive policy mistake. Of course, little do they know what this is going to mean. They're not going to like it, but nevertheless, that train looks like it's leaving the station. We'll find out in a couple weeks for sure. Let's keep going because for months, Powell asserted that inflation was transitory. Well, it actually is, but it won't be. It is, but it might not be, the sense that we will see it come down. But the issue is there will be some transitory inflation and there will be other things that are sticky, but we certainly are going to see it come lower. Now, and they're going to be completely shocked by that. But of course, tampering the balance sheet is going to help, and I'll show you that too. But let's go on. Rather than revisit in a timely basis his assertion in the face of ample evidence to the contrary, he adopted an ever more elastic concept of the word. I like the ever more elastic concept of the word that favored longer and arbitrary time periods because, you know, that's what the Fed does at the expense of economic analytical rigor that ensured that the Fed continued with massive monthly purchases of market securities at a time when the economy was doing just fine, the housing market was red hot, and the liquidity fueled, this is it, liquidity fueled everything rallying, financial assets was showing growing signs of excessive risk-taking. So that's the heart of the issue here, is that keeping policy rates low fueled speculation. And that's something a lot of people don't really understand. But, you know, when you look at low rates and people can borrow at a lower rate, why do they borrow money? It's because they can make more money somewhere else. So they borrow at a certain rate and reinvest the money elsewhere. And where did they do that? Well, we know that was in the equity market. But before we get to that, let's keep going. The problem now is it's such a late wake up to the reality of inflation increases the risk of mismanaging this policy catch-up process, exposing the economy to a higher risk of unnecessary Fed-induced slowdown. Aha! Starting to get to this. So not only do we have too much speculation, now we have the risk of the Fed trying to slam on the brakes a bit. And boy, markets really don't like uncertainty in general, but let's keep going here. As I've argued in prior columns, and this is the author's words, such a policy mistake, as I've said, were to materialize, would add to the woes of an economy in which the more vulnerable segments of the population are already having to cope with inflation taking a big bite out of their income, which of course we've covered repeatedly on the show, and where too many Americans have been priced out of the housing market. And Powell now faces a more complex communication and policy challenge. Essentially, he's got to pivot and not make himself look bad, that are partially of his own making. They have major implications for the livelihoods of not of just people in the U.S., but around the world. Meanwhile, markets will need to start adjusting to the gradual emergence of a different liquidity paradigm and no longer automatically benefits from massive Fed asset purchases. So now you see there's two sides of this. You've got the liquidity issue, you've got inflation too high, you've got big problems. But will a taper actually curb inflation? Well, it will, but perhaps not for the reasons you think. But let's take a look at the monetary base. This is the Fed's balance sheet where you see all the QE purchases show up. And I've got that against the year-over-year rate change in the consumer price index. And here you can see just a slowdown in purchases after QE1. Well, the consumer price index certainly slowed down. And here you can see QE2 after QE2, which is right here. Well, you see the slowdown in the CPI. It was still increasing, just the rate of the increase went down. And how about here? And remember this because I made a mistake, covered this up on one of the other slides. This is the actual tapering in here. And you'll notice the CPI, it didn't really go up, but it slowly trended lower. Not a big drop like we saw in other spots, but it trended lower. So what is likely to happen when the Fed starts to taper and slow down its balance sheet expansion is we should see the CPI go down. But again, not because the Fed has any direct relationship with it, because what they're doing is slowing the M2 money supply growth. Now, for those of you who are listening that know and understand my research, you know, listen to the Lacey Hunt interviews, the Snyder interviews, you know, my talks with Brent Johnson, you already know that the Fed cannot print money. Now, some of you are thinking, okay, he's going to talk about the M2 and how the Fed prints money. No, that's not how it works. In fact, I actually did a presentation earlier this year at a conference where actually step-by-step went through this in a way that no one's ever seen before, explain exactly what the Fed's doing. I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, and everyone said, absolutely do a video. So hopefully, and I'll get that done here in the next few days and pull those slides out and record that for you. But what I want to show you is when the Fed slows down its asset purchases, it's also going to slow down the money supply growth, and that has a direct impact on inflation, as Dr. Lacey Hunt and I talked about during his interview. And here you can see the monetary base against the year-over-year rate change in the M2, and notice how the Fed stops its asset purchases, slows them down right in here, and what happens? It, you know, you just see it drop down. But this is coming out of the recession. But look here, after QE2, notice that the M2 decelerates and slows down. And then you have up here during the tightening fat point, it really slows down. So what's going to happen with the money supply is Dr. Lacey Hunt shared with us, it's already headed toward below trend growth. And when the Fed backs off the accelerator, it's going to fall somewhere below 6%. He says it's already at around 5.5% and it's going to head lower. And that, my friends, is exactly why you see the consumer price index start to go down, because there isn't enough money to keep prices up. Consumers can't afford them. So then the question is, what does that mean for equity prices? Well, let's take a look, because I've got this chart here. Now, I've got the dates here in my notebook, so I'm going to just go through them, and I've crudely drawn some red lines. So we saw a slowdown in the Fed's balance sheet between March 10th and December 10th, and you can see the equity market here didn't like that too much. Then we saw it again in April 2011 to November 12, and you see it didn't like it too much. Here we see it again in September of 14 through September 16, a two-year period where equity prices went up and down. If you're trading, perhaps you could find a way to get through this, but overall equity markets were flat. So that wasn't good. 2 years, no gains. So again, some people are worried there could be these big drops, but they've usually came back. How about we go forward now to November 2017 to October 19, so almost two-year period? Well, it was up a little bit. So that's the issue facing the equity markets, is we see an increase in volatility, some swings in the market. It doesn't mean this whole thing falls off a cliff. It just means there are risks there. But is that the only story? And why do we see that? Well, remember those articles talked about risk-taking? Well, let me show you where that risk-taking is. It's in margin debt. And so what happens, you go back to these dates in 2010, and you see the margin debt gets flushed. This is where people are, the red, you can see borrowed money gets flushed out. How about in like 2011-12? You see it gets flushed out again. And then how about up here? You see 2014-2016, margin debt gets flushed down. And then you see in 2017, it gets flushed down up here again. And that's the real story, is that when the Fed backs off its quantitative easing purchases, it has some sort of effect on the bond market. And of course, that causes financial institutions to tighten up their margin debt or raise their interest rate, and that causes a pullback in credit and in margin credit. But look at where it is now and why we could potentially see a pretty big move, because it's at all-time highs. And it came down from those pandemic lows and people borrowed like crazy buying stocks. So the risk now is this could get unwound. Now, how far, we don't know, but it could get unwound some and bring equity prices down. And why does that occur? Is because when the Fed slows down its purchases or stops them, even worse, unwinds them, it puts upward pressure on the front end of the curve. And now you start to see where the short-term debt interest rate comes from on those margin loans from the front end of the curve. People aren't borrowing at 30-year rates to buy stocks. So here you can see after the recession, what happens as the Fed starts to slow its purchases, yields have come down. Now they rise a bit. Here you see them slowing their purchases and yields are holding. They're not falling. They're not really rising. But under here, which I again covered up inadvertently when I was taking the screen capture, what do you see is two-year yields rising, and those are unwinding those margin debt. So what happens is stock prices start to slow down their growth. Interest rates go up on the margin accounts, and all of a sudden you have people selling or liquidating their margin accounts because the rate of interest is more than their growth, and they get upside down, and the only way for them to get out is to sell. And so that starts to make sense. But what about some other risks that we could be facing here? And what did we hear just recently is this word stagflation. And this is one thing the Fed is worried about. And you see stocks, bond yields suddenly puke after Fed's Williams stagflation hints. Now, if you're wondering what that's all about, clearly it adds a lot of uncertainty to the outlook, Mr. Williams said, of the new variants. And I was talking about Omicron. Sounds like a transformer to me. But hey, I'm a child of the 80s after all. That's when I grew up. He later added that a risk with the new variant is that it will continue excess demand in the areas that don't have capacity and will stall the recovery in the areas where we actually have the capacity. That, he said, would, quote, mean somewhat slower rebound overall, and also does increase those inflationary pressures in the areas that are in high demand. And that is a labor issue and a supply chain issue that could very well lead to higher consumer prices while others actually come down. And that is a huge problem, because what happens to the economy when prices go too high and the Fed isn't actually printing money like most people believe? Well, here you can see historically high rates of CPI, and you see the shaded gray areas, they're followed by recessions. You see consumer prices get too high, you have recessions. Now, if there's money printing going on, there should be no problem affording higher prices, but since the Fed can't print money, well, higher prices lead to lower prices because consumers reject them. And so we see stagflation is a term used to describe slow economic growth at a time of high inflation. Well, clearly we have high prices, so is growth gonna stall? Well, let's take a look and see. Here you see gross domestic product against manufacturers' new orders of durable goods. Well, they're headed down, and you can see there's a nice relationship between the two, suggesting that growth is going to slow. How about against industrial production? Also on a year-over-year basis, you can see GDP up higher, industrial production heading lower. You see a nice relationship between that. As industrial production falls, so does growth. So there's slower growth. How about the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Survey? Also, again, nice relationship, saying as consumers back off their expectations of the economy and start to retrench, well, that leads to slower growth. So clearly we have an issue that Williams was right about, potentially a stagflation forming. And all of that because what happened today in the headlines, the cost stocks and bonds to fall, was Omicron hits U.S. Again, sounds again, someone, you know, grew up watching cartoons in the 80s. This totally sounds like a transformer to me. But you get the idea that further exposure to the coronavirus leads to perhaps people not going back to work or people unable to go back to work, keeping more pressure on the supply chain and prices higher where they shouldn't be. But at the same time, it does put some pressure on the Fed. We get that from today's ADP report. We see an increase of 534,000 jobs, a change in the U.S. non-farm private sector. We get the government statistic on Friday. Small employers increase hiring 115,000, mid-size 142, and large 227. And you can see we saw some nice construction and manufacturing over at 50,000 apiece. But where were most of these jobs? Professional and business, leisure and hospitality. These are going to be lower paying jobs that we see being brought back. But that makes sense, is when you think about this whole scenario, is we lost, you know, the pandemic, unemployment assistance, those extended benefits are gone. There are people that are going to need to go back to work because they can't afford these higher prices. And yet we're nowhere near full employment. And that's the danger, because the Fed's going to, you know, the government's going to say we're there, but we're not. And they're going to, you know, reduce the liquidity. They're going to reduce their easing from their quantitative easing at an inappropriate time. Because here you can see from the ADP data, employment was much higher than it is now. So the economy is not that strong to absorb these higher prices and the Fed pulling back, but it's going to anyways. And we got today the manufacturing PMI at 61.1, perhaps suggesting that things are also slowing down a bit. New orders, production, employment were growing. Supplier delivery slowed at a slower rate. And manufacturing inventories are growing while customer inventories remain too low. I still think that is a story that changes soon. Prices are increasing and exports and imports are growing. But what does that have to do with the equity market? Is where the ISM peaks, the manufacturing PMI peaks, usually the equity market will peak within 3 months of that. And what we can do is we can go back and see it's really not changed much over the last 12 months. You see the average is 60.8. We came in November 61.1, tied for the September high, just below the May high, suggesting that perhaps a peak here is in, and that would coincide with potential peak in the equity market over the next couple of months. But one thing that's interesting is prices paid. You look at that future inflation, you can see that only 67.9% of firms were reporting higher prices versus 72.3%. We know, and we've talked about before, where prices paid peaks, so do interest rates. But interest rates have already figured this out ahead of time, knowing that this isn't a monetary inflation issue. This is a supply chain inflation issue. And when you get high consumer prices due to supply chain and not due to money printing, well, yields go down. And that's really what matters here. We also see that in the crude oil inventory, which I've been talking about, potentially increasing those the supply in that. Now, it's normal that we should be seeing an increase, but the question is, will consumers reject higher prices because they can't afford them? Here we have today's crude oil inventory reports. They were only down 910,000 barrels compared to the estimates of a $1.2 million barrel draw. More importantly, we'll look at gasoline inventories up 4 million barrels. Distilled stocks, think of this as your jet fuel, up almost 2.2 million barrels. And that is a huge issue because here we see headline, gas prices pressure drivers' finances. U.S. gasoline climbed around 50% a year. Drivers paid an average of $3.40 a gallon for regular. Clearly, they're not referring to California, where prices are much, much higher. But anyways, so this is a point in the show where if you have your officially licensed bond cream crown, and of course you don't because none such exists, but if you have a crown, now's the time to put it on, because what is the bond market telling you? Why are we at the racetrack? Because the long bond is going down while the front end of the curve is going up. And that is bad news, because what is the long bond telling you? Do you know? Yeah, it's telling the Fed's making a policy mistake. And here's that chart. Let's take a quick look at it. For those of you who don't watch the Sunday Chart Show, where we talk a lot about this stuff, what you can see is the long bond 30-year treasuries breaking below this key level of 1.825, sending the next direction down to below 1.7. I suspect the computer algorithms will get behind this trend at that point, and we're looking at yields dropping down to potentially 1.2. And at that point, what I anticipate happening is you'll hear about financial conditions tightening. The Fed will be pulling back on their tapering. You're looking at a major policy mistake over the next several months, and that should take yields down to new all-time lows. And that, my friends, is why we're at the racetrack. Anyways, appreciate all of you being fans, supporting the show, and subscribing and doing all the awesome things that you do to support me. And of course, we'll work on getting that other presentation done so you can understand just how the Fed is not printing money. And when they undo this thing, well, it'll get even worse. And so with that, as I forgot to open up my spreadsheet to put the disclosure up, we'll wrap the show up and I'll see you back on Friday. I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information and is not intended to provide investor or other advice. This video is not to be considered as a recognition or solicitation by a security financial instrument or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter in personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.